Today, I would like to talk about the concept of sympathy and empathy. These are incredibly important concepts when it comes to making good characters and also to good GMing. Sometimes I read people say, "Oh, I don't want to play a narrative system. I prefer to have lots of rules because I'm very much about the combat. I can't do narrative." And you are mistaken, it has nothing to do with the rules. I play a fairly rules-heavy system myself. The hero system is like 700 pages of rules. The empathy and sympathy thing is a lot more important to narrative and making good characters, and it has nothing to do with the rules that you play by. What is preventing you from playing a good narrative is the class system, and that's because it's telling you, like, oh, you're this type of person, and it's kind of getting in the way of creating an empathetic character. So, to get into it, first of all, a lot of people get confused between sympathy and empathy. They think they're the same thing. They are not the same thing. Empathy is understanding why people do things, what their motive is, what are they feeling. It is essential as a GM that every single character you create must have some empathetic reason for doing things. Your players need to know why the bad guys are behaving like bad guys and why the good guys are on their side and so on. Same goes for stories, films, whatever. Every character should have some empathy so that the audience knows why things are happening. Sympathy, on the other hand, is just feeling sympathetic towards an individual. You can have sympathy without empathy and empathy without sympathy, or you could have both together. Previously, I talked about good characters like your paladin types, and I talked about how a lot of them are complete dickheads. And the reason why you get that, even though they're supposed to be good guys, is because many times players will play those characters with sympathy, but not really with any empathy. They don't understand why their enemies do the things that they do, but they feel sympathetic towards their own cause and will murder people as a sympathetic act for their own cause. And so when you really think about that, like when someone is being sympathetic but they don't really understand you, there's a lot of ways that that becomes antagonistic. In the best case, it can be a little condescending. Like, you could be sitting there talking about, oh man, I'm on hard times, money's not doing good, and they'll be like, are you constipated? Like, I don't know, sometimes I take a poop and I feel a lot better, and then, you know, that changes my worldview, and I earn more money because I smile more and everybody likes me more. And like, you know, your money problems may have nothing to do with pooping, but the paladin has kind of decided that this is how it is, so they're being sympathetic to you, but they have no empathy towards your plight. They just don't get it. They have no idea what's wrong with you. And they're offering advice anyway, so it's kind of antagonistic. It's a little bit villainous, or can be, on a soft level. For my case, often I like to create NPCs who are sympathetic but not empathetic as a challenge for the players to get around. They'll be politicians or somebody with something that the party needs, and instead of helping the party out, they just express sympathy. And they're like, oh, you poor guys, goodness, I wish you could poop better. And, you know, the party sometimes learns to really, really, really hate those NPCs, even though they're not, like, actual villains. They're not killing anyone, they just kind of suck. Empathetic characters, on the other hand, tend to endear themselves to everybody because they have a level of emotional intelligence that lets them kind of connect to others. So even if they're villains and they're opposed to the party, when they interact with the party, it'll be like, I get you. I disagree with you enough that I'm going to stab you now, but I get you. And people respect that. People really like it when the villains turn and they become friends of the heroes. And the way that you get that is by having a villain with a clear motive and enough empathy that everyone kind of knows why the villain is doing what they're doing, and the villain knows why his enemies are doing what they're doing, and everyone kind of respects each other. And then when things change and the villain says, like, okay, I don't need to be your enemy anymore, they switch over. And everyone's like, oh, this is really cool. I like this guy. He's really useful. So there it is. That's the secret. That's how you get your Vegetas and whatever. You just have a character who feels empathy and is empathetic towards the audience. A good example in media I can think of would be BoJack Horseman, who throughout his entire series is pretty much a villain. I mean, he's doing all kinds of things that you know are morally reprehensible, but the show demonstrates why he does it. I mean, the guy's like depressed, he's an alcoholic, he's constantly grappling with himself, he hates himself, and yet he's still the protagonist because the show creates empathy for him. We know why he does it. We kind of want him to stop, but we know why he does it. We feel empathy towards him but not sympathy. We don't say like, oh man, I really want to enable BoJack. Or sometimes we feel sympathy, I guess, and we want to enable him when he's improving. But you don't feel sympathy for his evil behaviors, you feel sympathy for his desire to do better. That's a more complex example, but if you go back to Vegeta, Vegeta, for example, just wants to be respected as the king of the Saiyans. And you get that, it's a really simple motive. And simple motives, they're beautiful, because you can do so much with just something like, I just want to be respected. The audience gets it, okay? He's insecure, he just wants to be respected. And if joining the other team and punching Frieza in the face is what gets him respected, then, you know, of course he'll do that. The audience gets it. His actions line up with your understanding. You can feel empathy towards him. So before you run off and you try to make a complex BoJack Horseman bard who is like really complicated and has a messed up past and was popular in the 90s and everything, you don't have to. You can keep it simple. And in fact, keeping things simple is usually a lot easier to do. It's difficult to make a complex character and then not fall off the rails with it. So, for example, I once had a player give me a 4-page, single-spaced backstory for their character. And in this case, the character was neither sympathetic nor empathetic to me. I read through the whole thing, and I did take note of it, but it was just like a list of things that happened. It was a completely expository paper, like an exam. And I didn't know what to do with it. It was something about like, oh, a cultist attacked me and then I died and I woke up and I had magic powers and it was just like, okay. But I didn't understand, like, why did the cultists do this? Like, why did anyone do this? What was going on? So later on, I did work this into the game, but I had the cultist show up and it turns out he was just selling occult items without fully understanding what they would do. So this player character runs into him and he goes, oh, I recognize you. Okay, I know what you're gonna say, but before you do, let me tell you, no refunds. And, I don't know what they expected me to do with all that information, but I teased something out of it with considerable effort. I looked at something where nobody had any motives, there was no pathos, no empathy for anything, and then I just decided to create a guy who was selling things. And the party wound up not killing him, because they were like, oh, well, he made me dead. And they're like, he clearly doesn't know what he's doing. Like, we could kill him, but it feels disproportionate. He should be punished. He did do wrong, but I don't know. Maybe he could give us a discount from now on. I don't want to kill him. Plus, the player character had come back and was technically immortal because they were already dead. And they had magic powers. And the cultist was like, I don't know, you don't look dead. Like, don't try to pull this over on. I just told you no refunds. So in a way, it kind of deflated that whole backstory because it made it silly. But that's what happens if there's no pathos, if there's no, like, empathy for anything. Like, if it's not really clear why things happened, then they could have happened for any reason. I could feel sympathy towards the character that got made dead and then resurrected with powers, but that would be it. I couldn't tell you why it happened until we got the cultist there and we found out he just did not know what was going on. But on the other side of this whole simplicity coin, I've got a game going on right now, and all of my players have given me really straightforward, easy, like, one-sentence motives. One of them thinks that society is stupid and needs to be proven wrong. One of them really wants society to respect him and talk about him in a positive manner. One of them distrusts society but wants to be accepted into it. And one of them is optimistic that we can all come together and create a better society. I know exactly what these guys are all about, I know exactly where they're going, the game has been fun and engaging and very narratively driven, and it all flows out from just these simple one-sentence explanations of, like, what is my character about? When the game started, the character who doesn't like society met the character who wants to be respected and exalted by society. And so basically, the first character says, oh man, I just want everybody to love me and make songs about me and everything, how come the bards don't sing about me? And the other character said, you don't need society to love you. Society is trash. Just look over there. Trash everywhere you look. Dirt. And this argument led to these two characters getting involved in a whole adventure. Everything they do kind of revolves around this fundamental argument that they're having. The one character is just trying to prove that everything is wrong, and the other character is trying to prove that he's good enough for this society the first character doesn't even believe in. It's kind of great, like, they antagonize each other, but also push each other onward. Like, when the guy who wants to impress everyone fails, the second character can be like, who cares what they think? Society is idiots! You're already great! You're great! And the first guy's like, ah, man, you're right. I better double down and keep trying even harder. I am great. I'm gonna succeed. It's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. You've already failed because you've already succeeded. It's like, I don't get it, but I'm gonna keep going anyway. Thanks for the pep talk. So you have very clear empathy for where these two characters are and why they do what it is that they do. And both of the players understand that empathy. Like, they know what the other player is playing, which means that they can much more easily bounce off of one another and do much more extravagant roleplay. It's simple to have a deep in-character exchange when everybody feels empathy for the characters, and they don't have to feel sympathy towards each other. They don't have to be, like, expressing condolences for every little turn, or, you know, just be like, well, I'm behind you just because we're friends, or whatever. They just know where everybody stands, and they actually fight. Like, they are, this party is fighting all the time about everything, but all of them knows exactly where their characters are and what they represent. And GMing-wise, this also makes it easy to referee and step in and make sure that the party doesn't fall apart, because I know what the characters stand for. If it starts to feel like a player character is maybe falling out of the game because they've been pushed too far, or something has gone over the line, because I understand their motives, I can go in there and I can tip down the scales. I'm the GM. I just make things happen a little bit to favor the party working together again. I know why they're going to work together. I know what it is they want. So I work a little magic and poof, we're right back to where we need to be. And that's honestly the secret to creating a game that sounds like a story, even though it's all improv. If everybody has their motives and you understand why it is that they're doing things, it's actually really easy to just kind of put your finger here or there and make sure that people are moving towards something that's productive towards the story. You can't really put your finger on the scale very well with sympathy. I mean, like, if you don't know why your player characters are behaving the way that they are, then the only way you could make sympathy for this fictional game is if you just tell them something that is blatantly supposed to be sympathetic. You could say, fight the Lich, because they're literally pure evil and are consuming the souls of children. That's a game through sympathy, and even there you kind of have a little bit of empathy, because it's like, well, why does the Lich do it? Because he's evil. I mean, it's not far enough to say, like, why is he evil? Why did he choose to become a Lich? We don't know. He did that hundreds of years ago, I suppose, and there's no turning back, but, I mean, it's more sympathy-based. You just create something that is blatantly supposed to be sympathized against, and you say, okay, go fight the evil. That's characters, but it's important for world-building, too. I know there's been a lot of talk about how Wizards of the Coast wants to make orcs be, like, playable characters. And so I looked into how they did this with one of their settings, and they go, well, the orcs got a good king, and he said orcs is good now. And the orcs were like, oh, we were just waiting for someone to tell us to be good. And now you can play them as characters. And, oh man, like, what a good reason to roll your eyeballs to the back of your head. like they paid someone for that! Somebody got paid to write that! Like, oh my god. And then, of course, there was the marketing and the social media. And social media is like 95% about sympathy with no empathy. People having feelings without knowing what the heck they're talking about. Like, oh, orcs are evil. Oh, no, they can be good now because they just, you know, maybe you say a king said they can be good. It's legally allowed. No, they can only be evil. Another book said that they were evil. I strongly recommend reading a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond. It's a book about nations and why certain nations got ahead above others. And it's a very objective and kind of fascinating read. But to summarize some of the key points, farming plays a huge role in the development of society. If you can get enough food, then that means that you can feed specialists, like scholars, or in the case of fantasy, probably wizards, or smiths, and all the other things that you need to make a powerful society. Societies that didn't have access to high-yield farming areas and really good crops would tend to be more tribal. They would rely a lot more on hunter-gathering type stuff. And if they didn't have access to lots of protein, they would also practice cannibalism. So they'd be more likely to, because they need protein. So you kill people and then you eat them, because otherwise you just don't get the nutrients that you need. It's a necessary thing. You have to be empathetic and say, like, okay, this is why people behave this way and form these kind of societies. So with orcs, If you're looking at orcs and you're saying that, okay, they're kind of like tribalistic raiders in your setting, they're savage, they eat their dead and stuff like that. Okay, these are creatures that maybe they live in the mountains or somewhere with like really poor farming, and they don't have access to a lot of livestock or game. So when they kill people or take prisoners, they eat them because they need the protein. But if one of those people were to join like a city environment as a player character, then you could say like, okay, this person now has access to these goods that society provides, this city provides, and that means that they wouldn't be a cannibal. Because that's kind of a sucky lifestyle, honestly. They're going to be more like everybody else. They're going to blend in with society more. So ultimately, you don't need some stupid, completely moronic explanation where like a king or a CEO comes in and tells all the idiotic poor people how to live and how to be good. You just need to have empathy for their society and say like, okay, this is why they live this way. And if you put them in a different environment, then they might choose to live a different way. And so you can have a player character be an orc and, you know, like maybe this orc feels sympathy towards other orcs. He's like, don't look down on my people. You know, we have it really hard up there. We have made do in the mountains for longer than anyone can remember. We don't even have written history, okay? Shut up about the orcs. Stop calling my people savage. You know, and that's kind of an interesting player hook to have someone who's very sympathetic about the orc way of life, trying to blend into society, if at least you're game story accommodates that. I personally like to include racism in my games when I feel like I can make it empathetic and meaningful and say something about the society and the people in it. The orcs living out in the mountains and turning to raiding and things because it's their best source of food and protein is so much more compelling than just saying a king fixed everybody. Like, look, going to war and raiding people for supplies is difficult. It is usually harder than just farming it yourself. So if people are doing that, then that means that they're doing it for a reason. And honestly, a king who shows up and just says, okay, orcs are going to be good, no more raiding, you know, and we're going to succeed, we're just going to let like the humans take this land that we've been worrying over all this time. They can just have it, the last of our fertile land. We're good guys now. Like that is an evil king. That is a king who has no empathy for his own people. And, like, he's just expressing sympathy for the humans who are encroaching on orcish territory. And if I were an orc watching my children starve to death because the king has passed a bunch of laws that say I can no longer go out and rob meat from the human caravans, I would be willing to take up arms and go kill the king. He's wrong. He's bad for me, and he is the enemy. And you know what? I don't see a lot of the orc territory supporting that king because he's evil. And you know who's gonna be behind the king? Only the upper class who are probably getting kickbacks from the king to buy off their loyalty. That's right, a little dash of empathy for the orcs, and suddenly you realize the good guy king that Wizards of the Coast wrote is actually the most evil king the orcs have ever had, and they have every understandable reason to want to go and depose him. And that should be what your next game is about if you want to play orcs as good guys. You've got starving kids at home, and you gotta feed them because you're a good dad. And if I were going to GM that, I would be thinking a lot about different ways that everybody could be right or wrong. So maybe there would be human factions that would want to provide, like, solid trade for the orcs so that they don't go hungry. But then, of course, you know, the merchants are going to complain. It's such a risk going up the mountains, and now you're saying we have to provide below cost. They don't want to do that. What if we got the human militaries involved, and they'll go to the king and try to lobby to have the military come and kill the player characters and everything that they support, and the king will be on the other side, and the king will want to appease the humans, and so, you know, of course, he'll send forces to stop you, and there's a lot of different ways that you could make this really fascinating, and a whole big campaign with lots of intrigue, and it would be, like, a legitimate story. I think maybe, like, the Orc Nation could become self-sufficient if they were able to push far enough into human territory to take this swath of fertile land. But then, of course, the humans would be mad, and they'd say you're evil, but look, now you're trading on equal terms because we have better production, and I'm just kind of making this up off the top of my head. But that's how you should be thinking about games and stories and everything else. And if your player characters can also create characters in that way, then it all kind of evolves naturally. I mean, your player characters maybe aren't necessarily going to be the characters that are like, we need to take over this land and then secure a future for the orcs. Some of them are going to be the ones that are just like, let's stab the king in his back. And they're going to try to secretly get to the court, you know. But That's where it's up to your players. And that's how the story becomes collaborative. But also, your players know what to do and what they want to do if the world itself is empathetic and makes sense like that. So, I hope this made sense, because that's it. It's over. I'll catch you guys next time.